How does it feel to be talking with people? What's most on their mind, the people that you've already managed to chat here?
I'd say it's so exciting to be in person. It's almost surreal to meet new people. Very exciting. And because it's been, you know, 2 years or so since I've really done something like this in person, it's remarkable how fast the world has transitioned in terms of adopting explicit sustainability goals.
Yes.
The number of investors that want to speak about it, that have new pressures from multiple stakeholders, from their regulators, whatever it is, saying, I now want to align my capital in some way with social and environmental goals, with net zero. It really feels like a revolution.
Let's talk about the transparency within that. The regulators, as you say, well, in Europe, the regulators are actually trying to get a step ahead of the curve, trying to take on what is known, it's sort of a moot point, a phrase that people don't like, but greenwashing. They're starting to put in place measures, checks, balances, ways in which they think that will be curtailed. Is the asset management community ready for that? Do you think that's the right sort of regulation that we need in place?
I think it's fantastic, because what you basically get is this interplay between investors say, I want to move in this direction, but they don't quite know exactly how to measure it, what to do. So they start developing all of these tools. And then before you know it, the tools proliferate and companies are like, you can't have a million people asking me to produce a million reports. It's got to be consolidated.
Yeah.
And then regulators, that's where they really step in and start saying, what's the most important thing here and how do we make one standardized thing? And what's happening today, which is really fantastic, is that more and more it's becoming clear that some subset of these things will just be required. They'll be part of what it means to be a company, be a sovereign. You'll have to report on them. And in turn, that just has a feedback loop where now people need to be aligned with these issues because they need to report on them, so they start caring about them internally. And the fact that Europe has been the most ambitious is fantastic. In particular, Europe has said, we don't only care about climate. We're going to think broadly about social and environmental issues and try to lead in terms of saying, this is what investors need to report. And I think that's the way of the future.
When you're, you know, co-CIOing, when you're looking at the investment opportunities out there when it related to sustainability, is there enough transparency out there? Do you feel that a lot of it's marketing, or that really there are opportunities there to make a real impact?
What I'd say is the data today is radically better than it was 2 or 3 years ago, but it's also clear it'll be radically better in 3 to 5 years. The best data today basically says, right now, tell me where a company or a sovereign is. Describe to me what they do right now. We've kind of gone from zero to pretty good on that. That'll keep getting better, but the next generation of data will say, measure their impact through time. How are their future plans looking? Do you think their improvement will actually be reliable? Are they really going to get kind of from here to there? Or if I held them in 2021, what was the impact they produced that particular time? That's kind of the next generation data.
You started this conversation by saying the transition here at Milken from people all talking about ESG, putting commitments there in some way, sustainability. Talk to us about the sort of tarnish that the word transition is getting at the moment. We're having an energy crisis sweeping through Europe, having impact on US oil, gas prices as well. And people are saying, it's because of the transition. We weren't ready. We went to renewables too quickly. Do you buy that at all?
Well, I think that what's happening now is having a few important impacts. One is it's kind of getting rid of all the naysayers that said none of this matters for investors. Very clearly, these things matter to asset prices and to economies, and to be a serious macro investor and ignore it just doesn't make sense. The second thing is that it's helping us focus on, you can't just say transition. There are different ways to transition our economy from what it is today to net zero. And the way we're currently pursuing it is, you know, not very coordinated. And the main policies that are being pursued are pretty inflationary ones. Mm-hmm. And so there are different ways of doing it. But if you do it by taxing, by basically putting a carbon price, or by saying, let's just remove supply, so I won't finance any more coal plants, or I'm just going to tell you, no more oil. By definition, you're trying to raise prices on the fossil fuels to shift people's incentives to say, actually, maybe it wasn't cost-effective before to do solar, but now it is. So you're kind of setting up to use these inflationary tools, and guess what? You're getting these inflationary outcomes. So it's a good time to reflect and say, is this how we want to transition? There are other ways to transition. If you look at some of the things on the table under the Biden proposals, what they had wanted to do, but is now very politically contested, is actually transition using more what we've called MP3 policies, monetary and fiscal together, where you print money and then basically spend federal money to more give incentives, make the other pieces cheaper. And so you can either make the carbon expensive, or you can say, let's pay you for taking on renewables. And then, you know, that's very kind of slowly inflationary because you're just printing money into the economy, but you're not squeezing the price of oil or coal. You're actually giving people incentives to switch to something else. So we can choose how we want to do this, at what pace, with what policy mix.
let's talk about the slower inflationary pressure that we've seen, because everyone wants to blame the Fed, everyone wants to blame central bank policy for what we're experiencing right now in terms of the sheer volume, wall of cash trying to find a home, asset prices going up. You then add to that the supply chain issues. You add that to the perfect storm that COVID plus energy crisis can give to an economy. As a macro thinker yourself, what does it mean?
Well, I think this is what central banks wanted, or policymakers broadly wanted to engineer, meaning we're 10 years after quantitative easing, which we saw that the way that money printing works is it mostly goes into the hands of people who hold financial assets, not into the real economy. So you get financial asset inflation, which exacerbates inequality. You don't necessarily get demand to spend in the real economy. Now they've used these new tools coming out of COVID where they print money, but they also pair that with fiscal side, where you literally give people checks. Guess what? When you give people checks, they spend them. That's people who are used to spending in the real economy.
Are they spending it? Because
yeah.
I've heard everyone saving some.
Well, they're all saving some, but it means that their balance sheets, their incomes for most households, especially in the U.S., are the best they've been in decades. They haven't sat on so much money, so much income, repaired their balance sheet, no debt service because of these engineered policies. And so we've created this great, better financial health than we've seen in a very long time in kind of the bottom 60 to 80% of households. And that means that it's very hard to cut off that expansion because households are going to want to spend it through time. They're sitting on this money, they're healthier, they're going to want to spend it. I think that's exactly what policymakers wanted to create because they looked at the pandemic and said, this pandemic on its own would exacerbate inequalities, would be very difficult on those households. Let's engineer a way to get the money. That's been extremely effective. And the side effect of that, as you're saying, is now demand is simply outstripping supply. Supply can't keep up no matter where you look. And central banks are at a place where, for the first time in a very long time, they actually are facing constraints on these policies. It's the first time where they're saying, wait a minute, there are actually constraints on us trying to be as easy as possible, move money to people as much as possible.